You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
The following podcast has been faithfully transcribed from Navarian into the modern language by Jasenia Neilwert, curator of the Scribe Quadrant at Basgaiath War College. All events are true, and names have been preserved to honor the courage of those fallen. May their souls be commended to Malik.
Welcome to season two of Between Pages and Friends, a book club podcast hosted by Con and Lauren, two besties who read a lot of books, and John and Kyle, their gamer-turned-reader husbands who've agreed to read with them. I'm Lauren.
I'm Con.
I'm John.
And I'm Kyle. You're listening to our first episode covering Fourth Wing by Rebecca Yarros, chapters 1 to 8. This is a book club-style podcast, meaning there will be no spoilers for future chapters or books, so it's a safe place to read along with us. John and myself are reading the series for the first time, so our wives, Con and Lauren, will be guiding us in a spoiler-free discussion to capture our real-time thoughts, reactions, and theories. And we'd love for you to share this podcast with your book besties and or significant other as well, so you can enjoy this epic series together too.
Additionally, this is your mild content warning. Fourth Wing is categorized as a new adult book, meaning it was written for audiences 18 and up. While the four of us have young kids and tend to keep our conversations on the less explicit side, we will be discussing themes from this book that include death, daggers, and juicy forearms.
If you're a fan of this episode and can't wait for the next, we have a ton of other content available, including over 65 hours of Throne of Glass podcast episodes, awesome podcast merch at betweenpagesandfriends.com, a YouTube channel with reaction compilations and monthly reading wrap-ups, and even more reading content on Instagram and TikTok. You can also join us on Patreon for early ad-free access to new episodes, along with a delightful community of other book nerds and tons more.
Lastly, the best way to support any podcast is by writing a review on Audible or Apple Podcasts. We see every review that you write, and they always make our day. Plus, you're likely to get a shout out right here on this podcast. Bonus points for sharing this podcast with your friends. Here's a recent review on Apple Podcasts from our new bestie, Zelda's Keeper 3. We love open dialogue. Loved reading along with you these last few months. You guys are so fun to listen to, and I can tell how much thought and effort is put into your comments and conversations. The true friendship vibes come through from each episode to episode. I find myself shifting perspectives between all the friends. See what I did there? And I can't wait to read along with all of you in the next series, Dragon Emoji. Thank you so much, Zelda's
so
Keeper
cute.
3.
Love you.
Thanks, Zelda's Keeper.
And now I would like to introduce you to my best friend, Con, for our pronunciation guide. Good luck.
That's me. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Welcome to the first pronunciation guide of the Empyrean series. We start each episode with these pronunciation guides for a few reasons. The first is that this is a fantasy series, so there are absolutely no rules. Reading digitally or in print can be tricky with made-up names. Second, for the sake of our discussions, it helps if we're all relatively on the same page about how to pronounce everything. And third, I do try to add a little bit of context to assist in learning all the ins and outs and who's who of a brand new world. So, as a disclaimer, this first one is hella long. Bear with me. Rebecca dishes out so much info in these first 8 chapters, so we'll go through it all beat by beat, but I'll try to breeze through it as quickly as we can. Lastly, these guides are based solely on the audiobook pronunciations. There are a lot of Scottish Gaelic words used for dragon names in the series, and if you'd like to know the authentic Gaelic pronunciation for the dragons' names, Murrin on TikTok has several videos discussing how these names are pronounced and what they mean in Gaelic. I'll link her profile in the show notes, but again, for the sake of our conversations, we are referencing the audiobooks narrated by Rebecca Solaire to use the author's intended pronunciation for this fantasy world. So typically I'll just do these in the order that they appear in the book, but for this one, there were so many that I've categorized them. So we're going to start with some places. The first being Navarre. Another form of this is Navarrian. We are at Bazgaeth War College. The Jacobos River runs near Bazgaeth. Moraine province is to the north. Tirindor is where most of the marked ones are from. It is the southernmost and largest province. It's bordering the Emerald Sea, Arctile Ocean, and the Cliffs of Drelor. We have the Kingdom of Poramiel also, which includes Krovla. Krovla shares a border with Tirindor. Athbeen is the outpost on the border between Krovla and Tirindor. Breivik and Signesen are separated by the Esben Mountains, and they are also in Poramiel. And then the Shakir village is in Breivik. Strythmore is where Mira fought and received the Order of the Talon. So for our characters, we have Violet Sorengale, our female main character. Mm-hmm. General Lilith Sorengale is Violet's mom. Yeah. Mira, aka Lieutenant Sorengale, is Violet's sister. Brennan is Violet's late brother, normal name, RIP. We have Dane Atos, Rhiannon Matthias, and Regan, Rhi's pregnant twin sister. Zayden Ryerson, Fen Ryerson, Zayden's dad, and Bodhi, Zayden's cousin. Some other students mentioned were Sawyer, Riddick, Tara, Jack Barlow, Ara Beinhaven, Dylan, also normal name, also RIP. Nyra is the senior wing leader and wing leader of first wing. Friar, Amber Mavis, Luca, Aurelie, Sienna, Tynan, Imogen, Garrick, Liam Mari, Oren Seifert, Naolin, and Rayma Corey. We also hear about Nolan the Mender and his wife Winifred, who is the best healer at Bazgaeth. She gives Violet the Legia serum. Commandant Panchek of the Riders Quadrant, General Melgrin, commanding general of all of Navarre's forces, Major Gilstead, who Violet has been training with for the last 6 months, Captain Fitzgibbons from the Scribe Quadrant, Professors DeVera and Markham from Battle Brief, Professor Emeterio from Sparring, Professor Kaori, who teaches about dragons, King Tauri, and then some of the death roll names mentioned were Elena Sosa, Braden Blackburn, Jay Sutherland, Dugal Luperco, and Simone Castaneda. Next, we have texts and excerpts. These include Major Afrenda's Guide to the Writer's Quadrant, Colonel Kaori's Field Guide to Dragonkind, Jacinia Neilwert, the scribe mentioned in the first excerpt, Venin from Violet's Book of Fables, Major Frederick's Modern Guide for Healers, and Effective Uses of Wild and Cultivated Herbs by Captain Lawrence Medina. For dragons, we have Einser, General Sorengale's dragon, Tyne is Mira's dragon, Sigale, the blue dagger tail bonded to Zayden. Blue dragons also descend from the Gormphalius line. Kath is the red sword tail bonded to Dane. Grian, a red scorpion tail mentioned in the class. Coda is General Melgrin's black sword tail. And then the Vale is the valley behind Bazgaeth where the dragons live. We're getting there. Events and world building. We have Conscription Day, the first day of school. The Gauntlet is the terrifying vertical obstacle course separating the Citadel from the flight field and the Vale. Presentation is where this year's dragons will get their first look at the remaining cadets. Threshing is when cadets have the chance to bond with a dragon. And then also mentioned is the Tirish Rebellion, the Trade Agreement of Resin, and then Violet's various poison ingredients, which are Fonally Berries, Legoral Mushrooms, Zinna Root, Tarsilla Leaves, Carmine Tree Bark, Walwyn Fruit Peels. Very lastly, finally, we have the gods. And so far, we've had a mention of Malik, the god of death, Amari, queen of the gods, Zinal, the god of luck, and Dune, the goddess of war.
Whew. That's amazing.
Thank you. I think that's officially the longest pronunciation guide I've ever done.
Yeah.
Ooh, all right.
I'm still confused.
Let me know if you have questions as we go.
I will.
I don't know how to pronounce my own name anymore.
And now I am turning it over to our resident J-O-N for the chapter recaps. Over to you, John.
Thanks, Quan. Welcome to Fourth Wang, people. There's characters, there's a plot, and there's a whole lot of Wangs. Dragon Wangs, that is. Okay, enough about Wangs. Here's your recap. We meet Violet Sorengale, a young woman who is set to be a scribe her whole life to go to Bazgaeth, but now is being conscripted into the Rider Quadrant thanks to her mother, General Lilith Sorengale, despite her sister Mira's protests. Mira gives her some tips as they sign in to their impending doom, and Violet climbs the stairs to the parapet. She makes a couple friends along the way, one dies, and then she makes an enemy. She slips a couple times going across the parapet, looks back to see Jack Barlow, the previously mentioned enemy, and he tosses a poor kid right off as he comes out onto the parapet, then heads for Violet. Jack catches up to her right as she makes it to the other side. They exchange words, Violet with a dagger to his twig and berries. And then we meet Dane Atos. Ooh la la. And of course, he wants to try and smuggle her out of the Rider Quadrant and into the Scribe Quadrant. But no can doosville, baby doll. They go to the welcoming coronation and see a few dragons that have come to check out the new cadets. Violet makes it through her first night, heading toward her class in the morning, and Violet and Dane have a little chat. We learn that Dane's signet is to read a person's recent memories. As they approach the classroom, they run into Zayden. Violet goes to history and her first battle brief. And then Violet gets her butt handed to her and her first sparring, dislocated shoulder and a broken arm. She gets healed up, heads back to her room where she finds her brother Brennan's journal under her pillow, snuck in by Mira. It's basically a guide slash cheat code for like how to survive and make it through this whole thing. There's like a layout of the place and he gives her like how to find who you're going to be sparring with every time. So sets her up really nice. And with it, she realizes how she's going to survive the next couple of months. We catch her sometime later sneaking out to get some poisonous berries. While she's up in the tree, a bunch of people approach. It's Zayden and several other marked ones having a little meeting, which we know is illegal. She eavesdrops a little and then waits for a while for them all to leave. She climbs down to the ground only for Zayden to catch her. They have an interesting interaction here. We also get a glimpse of Violet's knife throwing skills, and we got a new shadow daddy. But an odd twist, he doesn't kill her, claiming it would be too easy in this setting, especially if she were expecting it. The next morning, she joins breakfast duty, but only to put all of her foraging to good use and poison whoever she's sparring at the time, which she does over the next several weeks, weakening them in various ways to give her an edge. She wins them all. The sparring day that we leave off, her opponent was too sick and it was a no-show. But Violet doesn't get off easy. Yet, I'm assuming. As Zayden volunteers to step in. Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Amazing, John. I literally just got so excited. Like, I know we've talked about reading this series with you guys, and we've actually read the book up to chapter 8, but like hearing you do the actual recap, I'm just so excited you guys have seen this book.
It's
happening. I am dying to hear your thoughts. So let's jump in. Chapter 1. Here we go.
Chapter 1. So even before the literal content of chapter one, it was the pre-chap blurb, which I will now be referring it as to as.
Pre-chap.
Pre-chap. Yep. Pre-chap blurb.
Pre-chap.
It's the basically what we read at the beginning of the episode, the whole, you know, the following text has been faithfully transcribed, blah, blah, blah. I read that and I was like, wait, so like, are we reading like a copy of something? Like the events were recorded or summarized and we're actually reading like a history of events type of thing? I noted this would kind of be interesting take on the plot, obviously, because like we're not reading the events actually taking place, like they've already happened, and we're just reading the history that is leading up to the present moment, like in a future book. I don't know. I just thought that was very, very interesting.
That's what I want to know.
I also would like to know.
Yeah.
It does make me wonder, like, when it was written. Like, if it's journal style and it's written day by day or
that's what I mean. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, and it's transcribed from Navarian to the modern language, whatever that is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A lot of assumptions. Yeah.
And poor Jessenia, whoever she is, has to translate all of Violet's thoughts about people's muscles.
does.
Yeah, she does. That's the important history we need to know.
Yes. This is the context we need is about Zayden Ryerson's mouth.
That's right.
So funny.
It's also funny to think of it that way because, like, if it is journalistic, I don't know a single person in my life who writes a journal this detailed where it's like, then they said this as their hand caressed my elbow. Like, all right, I guess, yeah, go off.
I put in the other pre-chapped quote from the beginning because it is very important, where it says, a dragon without its rider is a tragedy. A rider without their dragon is dead.
Oh.
Oof. Important. Scary.
My very first note in this entire series was, there's a line where it's like, oh, it helps that their bonded dragons roast people for fun, just talking about what dragons do. And I was like, all I could think of was a dragon literally roasting someone. And what I wrote was just like, if a dragon was like, you remind me of the ends of a bread loaf. Everyone touches you. Nobody wants you.
Oh, all the other dragons. Ooh, oh,
dragon. Oh, oh, roasted. The guy just like incinerates from embarrassment.
Oh, boom, gosh. Roasted.
And that's how I started this series out.
That's amazing. Well, you know I'm back on my God's Watch shenanigans immediately. Mm-hmm. I hadn't caught this before, but before Violet and Rhiannon are introduced, this is Violet's description of Rhiannon. A woman with a full pack whose high cheekbones and oval face remind me of renderings of Amari, the queen of the gods. Mm-hmm. Just thought that was interesting.
Gotta love a woman with a full pack.
You got
what you got in that rucksack, girl?
Carry me across the parapet.
Stuff me in there.
Chapter one, guys. Chapter one.
That turn. I didn't mean for it to be that sexual.
You're not her type anyway, John.
Whoa. Well, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, good point. Yep.
Yep. Pretty shortly after that, we're meeting with Dylan. He is just sort of discussing his future plans. Big mistake. He says, I'm not dying. And I highlighted it and said, oh, so he's dead.
Yep. It's so immediate, too.
Yeah. My note here, too, is right after it was, oh, she's got friends. Probably both going to die.
And then he goes on to say, like, she said it would be bad luck to propose before I left. So we're waiting until graduation. And I just, so super dead. Like, you're throwing way too much backstory too early, man.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I literally thought about this when we were in Kingdom of Ash and we were talking about the random soldier's POV. Yeah. And you said, anytime somebody like looks into the camera and says, I can't wait to go home and see my family after this war. I was like, he's going to love Dylan.
Exactly.
He's going to love him. Aw, yep. Poor Dylan. On my first read of this book, this like really shook me. Chapter one, somebody's immediately dead and not realizing like what I was actually getting into with this series.
Boy.
Like, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. Kind of set the tone.
This part where he died, I sort of called it, obviously, but like he died and I was like, ah, that sucks. But then like so many other people did and everyone was okay with it, where I was just like, okay, so we're just fine with it. I don't have to even act like it affects me. People are dying left and right.
Yeah. We're off the hook.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
My next note was a note when she's looking at Zayden, saying, his gaze clashes with mine as the sky opens and rain falls in a deluge, soaking my hair, my leathers, and the stones around us in seconds. My first thought was, doesn't her mom control the weather? Is she causing this? Why would she not stop it if it was not caused by her? Is it unintentional due to her worrying for her daughter, perhaps? Kind of like what's her face? Tia Peppa.
From
Encanto. She gets worried and it starts raining.
Peppa, the clouds.
Look at this. I'm thundering.
I mean, this is an insightful pickup. Like, this was something I didn't notice until my second or third read. And then I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, I was definitely my second read for this. And so when he told me in person, I was just like, and he goes, you got to start working on your poker face, girl. And I was like, I'm just surprised that you picked it up already.
Well, and
like,
it's
not anything gives it away.
It wouldn't have been that major if not for, like, I think it's in the very next chapter we could talk about it. But, like, it immediately ends as soon as she crosses. And I was like, oh, now I'm even more suspicious of it. Because, like, I mean, I don't know the local weather patterns. But it seems like a quick 5-minute monsoon is weird.
Yeah,
well, and it's interesting because I think it's right before or right after this that she says in her POV, too, that, like, the sound of storms is comforting to her.
Right.
Oh, yeah. So then we theorized about, like, was her mom doing that intentionally to, like, sabotage her, or was it meant to be? Right. I wouldn't think that would be an intentional, like, oh, I know she loves storms while she's walking across the parapet.
Yeah, there's better timing for that, you know? Give her a storm afterwards or something.
Right?
Well, then there's that cinematic moment where they're like, what's your name? And she says, Violet Soaringale, right as lightning and thunder crashes. It's like a horror movie. Like, she says her name, Violet Soaringale. Boom, 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 boom.
Who are you? Your worst nightmare.
Exactly. So Mira helps her get ready and everything to go up and cross the parapet. And one of the last things she says is, stay the hell away from Zayden Ryerson. So she walks upstairs and immediately talks to Zayden Ryerson. I think that's so funny. But her description of him is, he's the most exquisite man I've ever seen.
Yeah, he is.
Tell
the
me
muscles
more.
In his chest and arms ripple, moving in a way that makes me swallow. And I said, hello, forearms.
She continues with, it's like an artist worked a lifetime sculpting him, and at least a year of that was spent on his mouth.
Yeah, it was. Okay, Violet. Okay. But stay away from that guy.
Yeah, exactly. But also, if somebody worked a lifetime sculpting a person and only worked like a year on his mouth, is it really that great?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's not.
Depends
a long
on
time.
How long you live, I guess.
That's true.
And how long you took on other places.
Yeah, like his nose.
Noses are hard to sculpt. You have to get it.
It's like drawing hands. The nostrils. Nobody can really do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, last note for this chapter was, the wind and rain steal any sound his body might make in the valley below, talking about Dylan falling down. I just wrote one for one, called it.
Is that your goal, to call every single death?
No. I mean, I've already missed like 8 because they just happen. It's like, this guy's dead. Cool.
But you guys did say in Throne of Glass that there was no real high stakes and like everyone was just alive and had plot armor. But like everyone's just dying left and right here.
I don't think it can count as high stakes if the people that are currently dying aren't known.
Are randos.
Like it's...
I mean, everybody kind of is. You're only in the first chapter right now.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, it's not really high stakes till you know people better. That would be like if I was affected playing a video game and accidentally driving onto the sidewalk and running over 8 people in Grand Theft Auto. It's like, oh, well, they were NPCs. What am I going to do?
Give them a funeral.
We are gathered here today. Okay, well, chapter 2, I just love Violet for passionately quoting the Codex word for word in the middle of a life or death situation. And she's like, Article 3, Section 8.
I know. Well, and it's such a neat way for all the lore to just be dropped. And, you know, because we immediately jump into some sort of action scenario with the parapet. But yet we're still kind of getting like the world dump of how everything happens and stuff. So I appreciated it. I think it's cool. And love our girl Violet for it.
I know. I love that it's just part of her personality.
Our chapter 2, I wrote the quote, Jack steps down into the courtyard, his shoulder knocking mine as he walks by, pausing to lean in close. You're dead, Soaringale, and I'm going to be the one to kill you. And all I wrote was, I'm getting like 2 vibes from him. Either A, that's going to be reversed and she's going to be the one to kill him. Or it's going to be one of those things that like, after reading this book and or series and getting to the end and you're like, oh yeah, Jack, he's turned out okay. And then you read the beginning again and you're like, wow, he was a dick early on. One of the two.
Sure.
Nice.
I love it.
Chapter 3. I believe this is also the pre-chap, the pre-chap blurb.
Pre-chap. Mm.
And it's talking about the blue dragons. And I just wrote, blue dragons, the most dangerous, you say? The most ruthless? Ah, and the rare blue dagger tail? Yeah, we'll be seeing one of them real soon. It's like, whenever they describe something being really dangerous,
yeah.
I mean, you're always going to see it sooner than you think you are.
Yeah. Or rare. Like, why would you mention it and tell me it's rare exactly. if it's not about to show up?
Right.
Right.
Yep.
It's rare, so we might not see it in this book, and then you see it. It's
so like let me tell you all the info about it real quick.
Yeah, just in case
wink.
It happens to show up.
That's kind of true for, like, all of the pre-chapter things, too, how they somewhat relate to the chapter, even later on, where it's like, you gotta get the timing right when you poison someone. So reading the chapter, I was like, so we're gonna miss a timing, I guess. Or something's gonna happen with the timing of it.
Yeah.
It is kind of interesting thinking back, though, how way back to the first one you said that it's all translated. So were those quotes included by the writer, or are they added in by the scribe who's translating as, like, examples of whatever? My next note is just sort of, we already touched on it, the rain easing to a drizzle as if it had only come to make the hardest test of my life even harder, but I did it. I just wrote, I'm even more suspicious of her mom. Leaning towards a loss of control over the weather caused by stress, but it could be, like she said, a little challenge.
Yeah. Just a way to test her or something, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will. I
guess we'll have to read the book.
Will we? Will we, Gavin?
So she finally crosses the parapet and makes it into the writer's quadrant, and she meets Dane Atos. She hurt herself, so, like, Dane takes her to his room or whatever.
Yeah, he does.
They have some, like, cute banter back and forth. It's kind of like a whole moment. And she has the thought of, maybe after all these years, we're finally on the same page when it comes to wanting each other. Maybe.
I love that you say their banter is cute. When the banter is literally, let me show you what my tongue can do. Like, it's so straightforward. It's not, I wouldn't say cute is the right word.
I mean, I'm thinking specifically of whenever she was like, you've seen me in ball gowns and whatever else, but it's leathers that do it for you. And he gets all, like, flushed and stuff. Like, that's cute.
Sure. After that, Caesars wrote, I had questions for this Melgren guy. He knows the outcome of a battle before entering it. And I was like, can he change that outcome? Or does he just fly in knowing what's about to go down? Because it says he can't be assassinated because he could see the attempt, which implies two things. He could change the outcome, and it's a passive ability. Because if you're being assassinated, you're probably not constantly on the lookout for it. So if he just sees these visions and can avoid it, then I don't know. Does it also count for just physical battles or verbal? If he gets into, like, a dispute with someone, would he be like, yeah, I see how this ends?
Don't bother.
Him and the wife. He's just like, I'm not even going to bring it up.
She just walks into the room and he goes, yes.
Whatever you say, dear.
That's hilarious, but I also really want answers to these questions. I think I think that makes sense, that if he couldn't be assassinated because he would know the outcome, it does make sense to me that he would be able to, like, do something about it after seeing some kind of, having a That's So Raven moment or something where he just, like,
That's so Melgren.
Gets the vision. That's so Melgren.
That's so Melgren. It's the future he can see.
I can see.
That's a shirt.
That's a shirt.
That's a shirt for sure.
I would proudly wear That's So Melgren shirt. I love, like, subtle merch like that only, like, a few people would do a double take and be like, what is...
Yeah, I'm on it.
That's so funny. Calling all book lovers, enhance your reading experience with Mood Reader candles, specifically crafted scents that transform any reading nook into a magical escape. From heartwarming romances to thrilling rebellions, yes, we're talking to you, Fourth Wing fans, there's a candle for every story. Use our exclusive code FRIENDS10 at moodreadercandles.com for 10% off your next order. That is FRIENDS10 at moodreadercandles.com. The discount applies to all candles except bundles and already discounted items. Treat your shelves to some extra charm. Okay, so when Connor and I read this the first time, we took a bunch of notes, and like I have them still in my phone. And so one of the first notes that I wrote was me being just extremely confused when she gets put in second wing. And I'm like, wait a second, stops my reading, gets my phone out to type this message to Connor, like, why is she in second wing? Shouldn't she be in fourth wing? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Checks and then the like cover of the book again. Well,
yes, what's going on? And then like literally a paragraph later, she gets switched to fourth wing, and I was like, oh, okay, this makes more sense.
That's crazy when you read. Oh, I
just thought that was funny.
Context is something.
Anyway, then I really liked the way that this was worded when the dragons show up, kind of perch on the side, and they are scaring all the first years or whatever. It's the sound of wings beating the air into submission. That's a really cool way of saying that, and I was just impressed. So in chapter 4, she is talking, I think to Dane in this moment, and yeah. Dane tells her, Zayden Ryerson wants you dead. It's common knowledge among the leadership cadre after yesterday. And I went, the cadre, they're here. Oh, yeah. I need like a freeze frame movie shot poster of all the wing leaders to go right next to my cadre from Throne of Glass, and then I'll have my cadre from Fourth Wing.
I love it.
I had several notes about Dane. One of which was his quote saying, I can read a person's memories, he admitted quietly. Not like an intrinsic reads minds or anything. I have to put my hands on the person, so I'm not a security risk. But my signet's not common knowledge. I think they'll use me in intelligence. He points to the compass patch beneath his fourth wing one on his shoulder. Wearing that sigil indicates that a signet is too classified. I just didn't notice till yesterday. And I just wrote, I'm sorry. Those who have secret signets have a patch? To tell everyone that they have a secret signet. I'm sorry. Just to like let people know they can't talk about it.
Yes.
I don't see how
don't
that makes
ask.
Sense.
I got a secret. Just wiggles his arms.
It confused me too, because like, especially after it says in her point of view that she noticed that Zayden didn't have a patch, but from what she said, it sounds like his signet is even more rare than Dane's is. And yeah, it's like no patch seems like the more logical choice here in all sense.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of is, the patch just tells other people to not ask, because maybe a lot of people around the college are like, oh, I love asking people what their signets are, but they're just like, oh, I can't ask him, though. But you could also easily just ask someone and they go, classified. Stop asking questions. Right. You don't need a special patch to be like, I got a secret. I can't tell you what that means.
I don't know if it's specific to the students, like if this is just something that the students wear, and maybe it's for the benefit of like, I don't know, the uniformity of like the school or the professors knowing what signets the students have in their class. Like, I don't know if that's what it's for, but I feel like that would be a concern if they wore them like into battle. I don't know how often other people are getting close enough to them to like see that. You would assume that they would be wielding their signet already if they were in battle, but I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, if I was the enemy and I knew that about them, if I saw anyone with that patch, that'd be like the first one. I feel like I'd be like, well, I better kill them because I have no idea what they could do. Not that I know what anyone else can do, but I especially don't know what they can do.
Especially if you only see them on like a few people.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that's got to be some kind of distinguishable.
Yeah.
You know, there's something going on with them, whether they're like a higher rank or something. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah.
And it's weird that it's a compass too. I guess, get the point of that yet. There might be some meaning I'm not getting, but seems like an odd choice for something secretive.
Yeah.
But they go on to say, or he goes on to say, I'm still learning, of course. I'm better at it the closer I am to Kath. But yeah, I just put my hands on someone's temples and I can see what they saw. It's incredible. And I would like to draw your attention to mere minutes ago when it said, Dane steps forward and cups my face, thumb stroking over my cheekbone. And I just wrote, I'm keeping an eye on those wandering hands, Dane. He's reading her memories without letting her know.
I mean,
That's temple right there.
Like, cupping someone's face.
Yeah.
Dane. This was something that I didn't notice last time, was like, obviously I knew they had lesser magic. We saw him open his doors, but I didn't realize it could like crank up their speed. For some reason, I feel like I missed that in the past, that they could just like be a little bit quicker. But the one that gets me every single time is that they really like Lesser Magic because it helps power ink pens instead of using those inconvenient quills. And I just have this thought every time that my most excited reason to have magic is that I can power ink pens. What? I don't know. Every time I hear it, though, I roll my eyes just a little bit. It's just like, yes. I don't know.
I'm trying to understand what they mean by power an ink pen. Because, like, here on Earth, our ink pens do not require any source of power. You just put ink in there and they work. So are they, like, magically filling it with ink or something?
Have they not figured out the ball part of the ballpoint pen? And so they just have to like control when the ink comes down or something?
I was assuming the pen would like write for them.
Oh, that would be cool.
Instead of, but that's like, I mean, in Harry Potter, they do that, but it's still a quill with like a little ink pot. And it, like, the magic still does that for them. I don't know. Maybe the fancy pens are easier to use with your magic.
Yeah, they're just there. These are like the glitter pens and like they're gel all pens. Gel and cute.
These are like Papermate Flares.
Someone who's not bonded is like, can I borrow a pen? And they're like, I don't think you can. Sorry. They're going to have to go to their own pens and power it themselves.
I had a note about this too. It was in chapter 5, but since we're talking about it, I highlighted where she said, I can't wait to channel so I can use the type of coveted pens mom keeps on her desk. A smile curves my lips. There could definitely be perks to being a writer. There will be. But not the riding the dragon part, but the fancy pens for taking notes in class.
I can't wait till the scene where she gets one of those pens and just like writes 3 paragraphs about how good it feels.
It's going to be the best day of her life.
Poor Jacinia had to translate it.
Dear diary, you'll never guess how I'm writing today.
Jacinia's like doing it all with her quill, like, ugh.
This sucks. Yeah, because she doesn't have magic. Oh, it's so funny.
Okay, my next note from chapter 4 is that Violet and Zayden are locked in a staring contest from across the rotunda. And Violet's like thinking, is this where he's going to kill me? The marble floor is gray, so it shouldn't be that hard for the staff to get the blood out. And I just keep cracking so up kind. At Violet. She's like one of my all-time favorite female main characters. I love her inner monologue. She's such a dork.
She just cares about the janitors, I guess.
Yeah.
So nice.
As they talk about the dragons, it just sounds to me like they're extremely intelligent, just how they've been describing them up to this point. I'm thinking of just like video games and movies where there have been dragons, and generally they're just kind of like really powerful feral beasts. I don't know what they're like in Game of Thrones. I've never watched it. So I love the approach that they have the ability to consider and like monitor and like assess. I don't know if they can talk at this point. We find out later that they can talk with their, communicate, thank you, with their writer. I'm assuming that's telepathically. Either way, I'm very intrigued about the whole dragon thing. Very cool.
Well, that's good, because that's kind of what this book is about.
I don't know about you, but I was really hoping for like a smog-like dragon speak, like in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Very that would be growly talk.
Yep, that would be awesome.
Ooh, you would love the, what's that guy's name?
Dragon
the tales. Narrator that does like the I almost said something I shouldn't. The narrator that did like one of the little blurbs for Fourth Wing. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. We can't show you that, but we will show you soon.
We'll show you later. It's a quote from like later in the book. But
yeah,
he's not the narrator for this audiobook. But they had somebody do some like little blurbs that were really cool.
Gotcha.
It's very smog-like. And moving on to chapter 5. Another interesting pre-chat blurb.
Pre-chat.
This one is Violet's mom about the order for the children of rebel leaders forced to watch their execution. And it sounds like she was vehemently against it, but I assume it was her as a general, or maybe it was when she was younger. I forget if it says that she's the general, like in the little description. I think it does actually. But it sounds like she disagreed, but the order was to do it. So she was just kind of following orders. But I imagine this will come into play later at some point, knowing that she executed Zayden's parents, his dad. It was both his parents. Dad.
His dad.
And obviously he's like still ticked about it. Like he mentions it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a very interesting little blurb there.
Yeah, that was a good catch.
I had written that during the battle brief in this chapter, we learned the responding squad knew of the danger that was happening. This town where the ward was weakened. They responded faster than possible if a messenger was sent. Like they had to have been moving as soon as it happened, if not before it happened. And they end on it being the dragons knowing the ward was weakened. I would like to note, however, that I suspect foul play, because I don't know why they didn't land on that, because the whole thing was like, oh, the dragons just felt the ward weakening. And I was like, well, or they just knew that it was happening because they were part of it. Like, someone there knew it was going to happen, and for whatever reason, also wanted to help save it. But I don't know. It seems suspicious to me.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
That's fair. Also in chapter 5, I had a note about Violet hearing someone refer to the kids of the Tirish Rebellion as marked ones. I just was kind of surprised, because in her POV it said marked ones, as I'd heard some people this morning refer to those carrying rebellion relics on their arms. Because I would assume that someone who was so familiar with like the history and had grown up on campus, and Zayden's not a first year, he's a little bit older. Like, I just kind of assumed that if there were children of the rebellion like around, that she would have heard this before. But maybe it's just not part of the scribe's commitment to documentation. Like, I don't think that would have included slang, I guess, if this is like a just a term that other people are using. Because it sounds almost kind of derogatory.
Didn't she see a marked one for the first time whenever she was in line?
Yeah.
Like, where she was at in Bazgaiath wasn't where, like, the writers were. And even, like, her mom was like, I won't see you. Or Mira, like, I won't see you for 3 years. Like, once you're in, you are in there. That's and true. Nobody sees you. And then Zayden is part of the first class of them. So it's only been a recent, like, he's the first class to come out and then be part of the other people outside of Bazgaiath seeing
That's true.
The marked ones. Makes sense. So
I thought that you were saying, like, I'm pretty sure she knew that people had rebellion relics and knew what they were. But I think, and I may be mistaken, but maybe this is what Gon was trying to say, was that them being called marked ones was what was new to Violet. Like, she might have known, like, the technical term for them, but marked ones being, like, some sort of college slang that...
Yeah, I understand that. But she wouldn't know it because they're all in the Writer's Quadrant and don't come out of there. Like, she would not have been anywhere near.
Yeah.
Yeah. That. I think you're right, though, Kyle, that she would have at least known, like, what the rebellion relics were. I think that was true in her POV, like, when she, even though she was seeing it for the first time,
she was
like, she knew what it was. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised that she was, like, hearing that for the first time. But I guess that makes sense. If they did, even though they weren't first years, even if she were on campus or whatever, she wouldn't have been over where they were, and they can't leave the Writer's Quadrant. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. But. My only note from this chapter, wildly different than everyone else's, they're starting sparring for the first time. And Violet's POV said all the other girls had, like, cut their hair because they were worried people would grab it. And she was talking about how her hair is long. And she said even the guys, they're mostly shirtless because they think that the shirts give their opponent something to grab onto. Personally, I'm not arguing their logic, just enjoying the view, .. Respectfully, of course. Well, hey, as long as it's respectful, by all means, continue. It's fine.
I'm not arguing their logic either.
I will not die, but also everyone around me is hot. Those are like the two thoughts going on right now.
Yeah. College.
Yeah. Chapter 6, I had to call this out because this is when Violet is with the healer. She's with, like, Nolan and Winifred. Is that the other, is that his wife's name?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I said?
Yes.
They give her this serum and she's basically drunk on this serum that's made from, like, hallucinogenic mushrooms or something. And I remember laughing out loud so hard the first time that I listened to this because I did all audio for my first read. And I was cracking up hearing the audiobook narrator do this chapter because she's, like, slurring all her words together and stuff. And I thought it was so funny. But then on my reread, seeing it on the page was even funnier to me because I didn't realize it was written out so literally where there's just, like, no spaces. There's a bunch of extra letters and she's, like, repeating words. Mm-hmm. It's, like, my favorite thing.
Well, and even just reading it on the page, you read it slurred, like, and end up, I felt like I ended up even in my mind just, like, saying it a little slower, like I was just like she was. It's really well done. Good job, Rebecca Yarros. And then at the end of chapter 6, when she gets back from the healers, under her pillow, Mira has left her what is called the Book of Brennan. And it said, Brennan wrote this for me the summer before I entered the quadrant. It saved me and it can save you too. I added my own bits of hard-earned wisdom here and there. So first of all, super cute sister bond. And I don't know, getting this cute thing from her brother. And helpful, super helpful. So
yeah, Ned's declassified school survival guide.
That's exactly what it is.
And chapter 7, this is when Violet is in the tree, kind of eavesdropping on Zayden and the other marked ones kind of chatting. As she comes down the tree and like Zayden catches her, she describes Zayden. I put, Zayden, beautiful, voice like rough velvet, perfect lips, kind of flirty, lets her go. If this isn't an enemies to lovers trope, then I don't know what is, nor do I care to.
Tell me more, John. Tell me more.
I love it. Yes.
I had to highlight one of my favorite quotes from, honestly, the whole series where Zayden looks at her and says, you look all frail and breakable, but you're really a violent little thing, aren't you? Zayden. And then Violet in her POV says, I hate how beautiful he is. And I was like, do you though, girl? Do you really?
I know I don't.
You're rolling your eyes. I just want you to be prepared that this is the rest of this podcast. It's just me fangirling hard about all the boys. They're all of them.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah,
everybody's right. Hot. We just declared that.
I know. Sure, yeah. We really did.
Of the two main male characters that we've met, all of you guys.
She's listed so many other males or whatever.
Mayonnaise.
What?
Sounded like that's what you're going to say. She's listed so many other man. Have you seen those videos where it's like the men as I picture them and it's like just, you know, the hot dude or whatever is like how he looks in the book and it's just the word Zayden? Because that's what I picture when sometimes when you're swooning over these guys, I'm just like, it's the word Zayden.
And this chapter ends with an interesting thought. I think it's just Violet's thoughts. We've gotten a couple of these that are in italics. It says, a fool with finally berries. And I'm sorry, but all I could think of when I read this was a fool with final me berries. It just made me chuckle. You know,
because, fondle me.
Into chapter 8. This is when we find out that she took on breakfast duty to poison whoever she's fighting in their breakfast. And I just, that's just all like awesome. It's such an, I put an intuitive lead character. Yes. Yeah. Just one up everybody. Yeah. And she uses different ones, different times. Like the one it describes a whole wing or a whole section or something like got sick. So it was must be going around or something. It's like, man, that's pretty funny. Pretty good.
Well, and speaking of fondle me berries, there's a quote saying, do most men forget when a woman holds a knife to their balls? And I just wrote, hey, no one forgets their first time, you know, it's special.
And I wrote, I certainly haven't.
moons ago, you know, young love.
Yeah, many moons.
For context, it wasn't me.
This is sort of similar to John's comment about the blue dragon earlier. We're learning about this black dragon, the most powerful and rare of its kind, refuses to bond with anyone. And I just wrote, wow, it sure would be crazy for our lead character to get a crack at it, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it?
You had your notes in here first. So when I read that, I just put LOL. My notes were black dragon, rarest, you say? What's that? Only time we'll ever see him? Yeah, Violet's getting that guy, for sure. For sure.
I had a note that's like, kind of God's Watch, sort of. I'm just kind of looking at whenever they're mentioned. So this was, I think, Professor Kaori saying, after all, bonding makes you a writer, but resurrecting someone from the dead? Now that makes you a god. I somehow don't think Malik takes kindly to a mortal treading on his territory. Mm. I don't know that I want to say that I'm hopeful that we like see this at some point, because I'm not, but I just thought that was interesting. Because he like specifically mentioned the god of death by name. So it's going in the notes.
Hmm. Yeah. And I know this happened in literally the same couple of paragraphs or something, but I called that it was Brennan the writer tried to save, even though we learned it like right after that.
Sure.
Yeah. You still called it.
Yeah.
Still called it.
Yeah. You called it. That counts.
To win.
On the board.
For one. You gonna called it count for this one?
Maybe we should. They both already called one.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
My note, I just the whole end of this chapter, and it was just, yeah, like John had said earlier, of her going through all the different times she poisoned somebody and stuff. And it was like, this week I did this, and next week I did that, and then this week. And I was like, I feel like in the 2 pages that I read all of that, I've read more time passing than the entire Throne of Glass series combined. And I just really appreciate seeing the passing of time and like understanding where we're at in the calendar. And she was like, it's the beginning of August, and I'm doing this. And then later it's like, and that took us to the end of August. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm with you. I know where we are.
I wrote that quote, he'd probably think twice about plotting your murder if you threw a few daggers at his head. This was Zayden to Violet. And I guess he didn't specify which head, because she opted to throw one dagger to his ear and one dagger to his groin just to cover the bases.
That's good.
She does like to follow instructions. So
to a T.
A-plus student.
So our last line for chapter 8 is, and Zayden walks onto the mat. And John finished reading this and he walked out and he goes, oh, what a place to stop.
It is, though. It's so good.
Yeah. Okay, so we are dying to know your thoughts on some specifics at the beginning of this series. So let's start with the world building. What do you guys think so far? How's the flow of information? Is it easy to follow? And are you excited to learn more?
Yeah, I'm liking it so far. I've talked with you a little bit about this, but like I'm having trouble visualizing some things, which is, it's just frustrating thing for me personally. It's mostly like how the buildings look, not necessarily where everything is because we have the map, although that's still trying to just wrap my head around all that. But I'm liking the little bit of history we're getting here and there, you know, as the present plot develops. I'm getting more excited about the dragons, like I mentioned before, and the more we learn about them. One of my only expectations at the start was a lot of death. So far, we're pretty lined up with that. So,
Yeah.
I said I feel like it hasn't all settled into place for me yet, which is fine. It's just the first 8 chapters. That said, I don't know if I'm supposed to care or be shocked by all the death. I assume not, since no one else cares. But that in and of itself should be weird. We even talked about the one scene where Jack literally kills a dude on the mat during sparring. And all the coach, professor, whatever does is like, hey, cut it out. There's no further consequence. So I was like, whatever, man. I guess we don't care that much. The flow of information, I feel like, is fine. We're getting world building, backstories, etc. I'm sort of just waiting for that one lore drop or piece of info that will be like, like I'm seeing the bigger premise or whatever. But I imagine it's not merely about angsty young adults killing each other for the best grades in dragons, but it could be. I could be here for that too. But I feel like there's a bigger story we've yet to hit.
Yeah.
I will say with what you were talking about, John, I also struggle, I feel like, with the map and like wrapping my head around when they're like these ginormous dragons. And then I'm like, but the buildings don't feel like that matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Some of those things I've always like struggled with that mentally. And I've just like taken out like, cool. I'm just not picturing it the right way, I guess. I don't really know. But so I'm with you there.
Yeah. John did ask for some fan art the other day of just the school, like what the buildings look like.
Mm. Yeah, especially like the, it was when I was reading when they were walking up to like get signed in. They kind of described like different paths leading to the different schools or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't just wrap my head around that. All I could picture was just a modern day quad in a college and it just being super busy. And that just kind of annoys me because I want to picture something cooler.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, I don't know.
Did the fan art help at least?
Yeah, kind of. A little bit.
All right.
It mostly just gave a picture. What you showed me just gave a picture of like a main college building and then the writer's quadrant, like with the parapet connecting it. So,
yeah.
It'll do for now, I guess.
That'll do. Okay, so give us your first impression on the characters that you're meeting so far. I know we haven't gotten a lot yet, but characters like Violet, Dane, Mira, Zayden, Rhiannon, Jack, you know, like all these side characters or professors, main characters, what are your thoughts so far?
I like Violet so far. I'm glad she's starting off as like a little sassy and determined given her circumstances instead of this timid little thing that's scared to death of being moved to the writer quadrant. I like that she's coming in kind of bold in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Dane is fine. Seems a little uptight. I like Mira, but I'm afraid she's going to die in one of these battles we hear about, like in the battle brief, especially if the fighting starts to move closer, like closer in from the border if they start coming farther across.
Yeah.
It's Rhiannon?
Rhiannon,
what is
yeah.
it again? Rhiannon. I was like kind of slightly suspicious of coming into the beginning. That feeling is waning a little bit as their friendship grows. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a beat yet on Zayden. Mm. He hasn't had enough airtime for me yet to really...
Airtime?
So verdict's still out on some of the other characters as well.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Kyle?
All I had written was, I'm suspicious of everyone, just like my own freshman year. But I will say, I do like Violet as well. I feel like she...
I mean, kind of like you said, she's sort of dorky, internal monologue, but she's also cunning and...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. She's just very true to what she is. Like, she knows what she is. She knows what she's capable of. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem deterred by what anyone else thinks in regards to that. I've already said I'm suspicious of Dane just because of the face touch. If he does that too often, I'm going to be like even more suspicious every time.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the same. Like, the other people, haven't seen him too much. I will say, just seeing his name now reminded me, is it Riddick. In class, when the professor was talking and he'd jump in and finish the professor's sentence like several times, I was like, shut up, dude. Like, you are the worst person. Like, just let a person finish a sentence without, like, the professor saying this like profound thing and Riddick says the last word of the sentence, which is easy to predict based on how anyone talks. Say the last word, take the credit for the whole thing. That's how his mind's working. He's like, oh, yeah, we're all going to be safe. We're all going to be safe.
Nailed it.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah, we're on the same page. I'm as smart as this professor. Like, I don't know. It was a really big
He's like the class clown. He's just like kind of this goofball on the side.
I guess. Class clowns don't mind. In college, it was such a pet peeve of mine when people would just like do exactly that, like finish the professor's thought for them. And I just want to be like, hey, can you shut up, please? Because I am not going into debt to hear you speak. So, but otherwise, everyone else.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. So along that same line of thought, like, do you guys have a favorite character and or a least favorite character? So far, like, obviously you've read 8 chapters, but like initial vibes. Yeah.
Violet's my favorite so far, mostly for the previous mentioned comments. My least favorite is Jack Barlow. He's a tool. I hope she uses some of those shrooms to give him dysentery or something.
Is this the Oregon Trail?
That's amazing.
Oh, that's so funny. I mean, like, technically, I'm sure that I do because I can't know any amount of anything without automatically having a favorite and least, but I just can't pick it out of my brain, you know? Mm-mm. They're just all there.
Yeah, sure.
Like I said earlier, it's like, it's only been 8 chapters. It's only been a month.
Yeah.
So, still getting to know everyone.
Yeah. All right.
Word.
So this is the part where Connor and Lauren will practice their poker faces and turn it over to the boys for their official thoughts and theories for the first book in the series. I got to say it because I'm not giving my theories. Thank you. Take it away, John. Look at us switching spots.
The cadence was so good.
It was good, yes.
So the most obvious is Violet getting the big bad black dragon that no one has ever seen or heard from in years and who never bonds, blah, blah, blah. It would be interesting if either Violet's mom or Melgren, but not both, is a major conspirator of the attacks or in the attack, somehow giving away information or something. I don't know. I feel like that would play out in an interesting way since they have a bond with the dragon. So it would be like the dragon would also kind of have to go along with it since it was alluded to the dragons also having some kind of law, which means maybe even like a moral code. So that'd be kind of interesting. I think when Violet gets the big bad black dragon, it will already know about the attacks and have more info as to the reason. I think Violet and Zayden will come to somewhat respect each other as time goes by. And of course, eventually get down and dirty, probably on a dragon at some point.
On a dragon?
Wingspans will be discussed, I'm sure. Because I also think that her and Dane will get it on too, but them first. But it was a mistake and it will ruin their friendship because duh.
Violet, look this. At you.
And he'll accidentally hold her face and see that she had no fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
He'll be like, yeah. Oh.
Okay, I'll just awkward. Be look, I don't want to bring it up, but I noticed that in your memory, it was a bit different from mine, how I saw it.
Oh, my word.
Mira told her to get around, so.
That is true. She did not hesitate with her attempts to, like, the first time alone with a dude. Let me show you what I can do. Time show and tell.
Oh, you're my right. God.
All right, Kyle. Thoughts and theories?
I think there's a traitor in our midst at this college. Traitor. Or more than one. I think the wards are being weakened, not just weakening by themselves, but like being weakened by some nefarious ne'er-do-wells. Alternatively, it is just war. Like they said, times are tough, and it's been a sucky time for everyone involved, including the dragons. I kind of wonder if there's like a third faction like the rebels or like an unheard of, you know, group that we'll learn is because we have the dragons, we have the griffins, we have the rebels. And I feel like maybe there's another party involved somehow that we just don't know about yet. And I also just don't trust Dane. Too handsy, pushy with his agenda. Literally every time I think he's being like helpful, it's all revolved around getting her out of here. Which I understand could be coming from a well-intentioned area with poor execution. It could also be that he's trying to hide something. Who knows? But he just gives a weird vibe.
Yeah, I feel this. I feel that too.
All right. Usually at this time, we would talk about the cry counter. I don't think anyone cried in the first 8 chapters, but I will just put it...
For Dylan.
I tried Dylan. To start reading again.
Dylan! My boy!
Oh my god. I'm just saying this is where we would typically talk about it, and one day if we cry, we'll bring it back up. That's it.
That's it.
I'm expecting no cries this series.
Really?
No cries? Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. The whole series
from
or just
any of book? Us?
Series.
Or just
from
yourself?
From either me or you. From us.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's gonna be quite as touching, let's say that.
I don't know. I think that Throne of Glass had emotional strings all through it to where almost it could build a callus against it. But if we're at this war college where deaths are happening all the time and then we just sort of get used to shrugging them off, but then there comes one where it's like, oh, I didn't expect them to die or in that specific way or like the ramifications of it.
Okay.
Perhaps if there's like a hard switch to emotional, because there really hasn't been for death so far. It's just been like, oh, this dude's dead.
Right.
But I've not seen Yaros describe an emotional death, so I don't know how she'd go we'll about see. It.
Okay.
Right. We shall see. Okay. That's it for our first episode. Thank you for joining us for the very first episode covering Fourth Wing. Join us next week as we continue with chapters 9 through 17. Again, our reading schedule is pinned on Instagram if you would like to follow along.
In the meantime, check out our website at betweenpagesandfriends.com for sweet merch and all of our links for staying connected. While you're there, go and sign up for our monthly newsletter and check out our Patreon for our community of other really cool nerds. Till next time, stay wordy, stay nerdy, don't stress, and stay blessed.
Bye!
Bye!
Are we flying again? We're not being dragons anymore. I don't know what's happening.
Is that not how a dragon sounds?
Oh my word.
So they talk to their writers.
Oh man. If they talk and their voice is like, Violet, we need to go to this.
like Mickey Mouse.
Come on, flashbacks to like episode 3 of Throne of Glass.
Oh yeah.
What did you say during that one?
Something about
which Mickey's... one of these tools could kill a man?
Yeah.
That's right. The sword. Good times.
Oh my word.
Oh, wow. All right.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.